Hello, folks. My talk today is about Isabel Hutchison. Now, the thing is, we sometimes don't understand why people are forgotten about in history. And one such is our Isabel. So I hope by the end of my chat, you'll recognise she should be much better known. Isabel Hutchison was from a very wealthy family of wine merchants in West Lothian, then born in 1889. They had made their money in the city, and they had enough money to move out of the city. So they bought themselves a very large country estate, only 8 miles from the centre of Edinburgh in West Lothian. She had a lovely outdoor childhood. She was very close to her two brothers and especially spent hours with her beloved grandfather, who also lived with them. And he was the man who encouraged her love and then her knowledge of botany and gardening and horticulture. In fact, when she decided what to do with her life, quite unusually, she went along to agricultural college, thinking that would be the direction of her life. In her late teenage years, there were two huge tragedies in the family. Both her brothers were killed. One brother was killed in a mountaineering accident in the Scottish hills, and the other brother, one of so many, in World War I. Her sister by that time was married to a sea captain, and Isabel realised that, you know, this sea captain wasn't much of a husband. He wasn't around very much, and Isabel decided that marriage was not for her. And when her beloved grandfather died, he left her an annuity. So she was a woman of independent means, and she could take her own path. And her decision was to walk long distance walks, to travel perhaps with friends. The first such journey was to Europe. Perhaps many of you will empathise with this, that after a few weeks travelling around Algeria with a friend, she decided she'd really rather be on her own in the future, and that was her decision. So she set about her great treks, which were all in the Arctic. How to fund them? Write about them. Why was she doing it? Not for empire, not really for glory, but to study the natural plants of the area. So setting off with all her botany muscles exercised, her first trip was to Iceland. Now, she didn't want to just stay around the towns, she wanted to travel round the island. But no guide would take this woman on her own for a walking trip round the island. It was a shock, not decent. The best they could give her was a map. So she set off on the 200-mile trek to find the freedom, to find the plants, and to speak to the people. And the Iceland trip only served to confirm her joy in travelling on her own in the Arctic. She collected her flowers, she wrote her articles, they were well received and she was paid. So with that encouragement, the next trip, well, just a bit further along the Arctic Circle, this time the vast, vast island of Greenland. In 1929, she took herself off to Greenland, once again studying the flowers, once again studying the people. She very soon saw the contrast in this country of Greenland between the Danish officials, because of course Greenland was officially a colony of Denmark, and the local Greenlandic people. She didn't like it. She wanted to be with the local people. She was quickly showing her facility in languages and fluent in Greenlandic by the time of the end of her stay, which lasted 7 months. Through a Greenlandic winter, she exercised on homemade steel skates, And the other significant enjoyment in these long wintry months was country dancing. And not just any country dancing. They invited Isabel to dance the local folks. And as she walked towards the hut in the darkness, she could hear Scottish country dance music. Went in, had a wonderful time, and asked them why Scottish country dance music in Greenland. And the explanation was that for many years, the Scottish whaling ships had called in and had wintered during the seasons in Greenland, had married a few of the local women and even settled in Greenland over the years. Once again, her article was well received and she collected her plants, came back to Scotland to the vast baronial pile of the family home, Carlowry Castle, and planned the next trip, which in 1933 found her travelling from Britain by ship across the Atlantic through the Panama Canal and finally reaching Alaska. Now, Alaska in 1933 was at a crossroads of the old life and the new life. She went further north up the west coast towards Alaska. Several of the old-timers, the gold prospectors, were let off at a certain point as they were going up the west coast. She also saw the faded grandeur of the large gold rush hotels, deserted ballrooms, virtually empty hotels, feeling perhaps rather isolated. One town she visited, they didn't even have a restaurant in the hotel, but the police chief directed her along the road and she walked into the restaurant and immediately the owner said, "Are you from Scotland?" Isabel said, "Oh yes." And the owner said, "Well, my mother was a MacLeod from Skye and she was at home and she was safe." Now, as I said, Alaska was this mixture of the old world of the gold rush and the dog sleds, but it was also coming into the present day, and President Roosevelt of the United States had actually set up a colony for farmers trying to escape from the dust bowl of the New Deal years in America, the Matanuska colony. Farmers willing to work, but farmers finding the frozen lands of Alaska very, very difficult and perhaps not much better than life back in the Depression years in the States. Those months in Alaska once again only confirmed Isabel's love of travel and Isabel's love of her plants searching. Back in Scotland to gather together her resources again, one last trip, as it proved. And she went to the Aleutian Islands. Now, if you're trying to find the furthest point away from Alaska, go straight west, a string of islands known as the Ring of Fire. The weather was very rough and the seas were difficult, but Isabel managed to cope with it all. Admiration came to her from the crew of the ship, and in recognition of this, they declared her an Admiral of the Bering Sea and had a special ceremony on deck. She went to the farthest west point of these Aleutian Islands called Attu. And the island of Attu is actually so far away from Alaska that it's closer to Russia and to Japan. But there she gathered plants and she spoke to the people and she came back to Scotland. As a wee side issue for you, World War II did not forget the remote island of Attu. And due to its proximity to Japan, it was actually invaded by the Japanese. Most of the inhabitants of Attu were taken away to Japanese prisoner of war camps, as were the few American soldiers based on the island. It was known among the troops of both sides during World War II as the Forgotten Front, and there are vivid scenes of soldiers coping in the ice and the snow during that time of World War II. Attu today is still a site of extreme weather, and due to that it has a weather station and it's also used for US military testing due to its remote location. Isabel, meanwhile, was back in Scotland. Her house of Carlowry Castle was taken over by the RAF during World War II due to its proximity to the bases and the RAF bases round about Edinburgh. And post-war, this woman who had survived the chill of the Alaskan winters decided to tend her gardens and restore her house. Now, there must have been something healthy in this plan, because Isabel Hutchison lived very well till the grand old age of 92, and she died in 1982. The house, Carlowry Castle, needed a lot of work, and it was finally taken over by the Marshall family, and it's now one of the top luxury hotel venues in Britain. You know, the kind of wedding venue if you want to spend thousands and thousands of pounds in a baronial setting. Now, why have I wanted to shed some light on Isabel Hutchison? Because she was one of those early women adventurers and explorers we don't hear enough about. They were ridiculed by other climbers. They couldn't find proper gear or even proper clothes. Used to hitch up their skirts so they could walk through the mountains. And the Ladies Cycling Climbing Club was actually set up in Scotland in 1908. And let's hear it for another explorer and adventurer. We've all heard, of course, of Phileas Fogg and his travelling round the world in 80 days. Well, actually, it was a woman journalist, an American called Nellie Bly, who did travel round the world in 72 days in 1890, showing an adventuring spirit, showing courage, and showing that women could tackle these adventures. I think I wanted to finish today by telling you Isabel's words when asked about her journeys. She said, "Why not, indeed? Why not?" And I think that shows the spirit and the adventuring ways of Isabel Hutchison, a woman overlooked by history.